Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman, and this week I am joined by Jess, friend of the pod and former host of the Splatbook.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. No Andy this week. He's out with a medical thing, but he'll be back next time. Jess was very generous to offer up some time to come on the podcast and talk with me. So the reason I invited her on is because we just finished playing a short campaign in Daggerheart. Jess was the GM for that. I guess I should ask, what do they call it? I don't even think I asked. Is it the GM in Daggerheart, or is it something like the lore master?
Although I love a lore master. So, yeah, but stick with GM.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. So we wrapped that up on Sunday as we're recording this, and I think it was it 5-6 sessions. I don't, something like that.
I think it was ultimately, I think it was a session 0 and then maybe 4 of play.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Pretty brisk, yeah. Not terrible.
Yeah, pretty brisk, but I think it gave us a good opportunity to kind of see the system. Yeah. And so we were sort of talking after we finished, and I was like, oh, this is a really good conversation. I should invite Jess on. We should just talk about this. Sort of because I think one of the other players kind of mentioned this at the end, and I'm going to try to not say names just because I didn't ask everybody if they're okay with us talking about them. But one of the other players just mentioned that Daggerheart, it was Daggerheart and Draw Steel and Tales of the Valiant were sort of these three games that really came out of the OGL stuff with D&D, right? So, I mean, right. You know, Daggerheart, I'm sure, was in production, a lot earlier than that and all that. But it's they're really sort of the games that people are pointing to is okay, so you're mad at D&D for whatever reason, or you want to try something different. Here's mm-hmm. your three options. So just I kind of want to answer the question about what do we sort of like about Daggerheart, and what was interesting about it, and why would you choose it if you yeah. wanted to? Not a commercial for it, right? I mean, ultimately, we could come to the conclusion of just being no, the answer is don't do it. that's fine too. But yeah, so I wanted to ask from your perspective, so running it, I know you've got a big history. I mean, you're an expert, dungeon master
expert and all that. Expert is such a strong word, but very kind.
Yeah. Yeah. In D&D, right. So I mean, yeah, what was the experience for you kind of I guess, yeah, using this new system?
I was drawn to it. I think through just a lot of my gaming history, I really have liked Dungeon World. Mm-hmm. And so looking for those more narrative forward, because the way that I play 5e is narrative. It's very yeah. hand wavy. So I was like, yeah. You know what, maybe I should look for systems that embrace this instead of yeah. corrupting the 5e as it's written, yeah. right? So I think I went to this looking for a similar kind of narrative, a little bit more player engaging, which I think this does a great, great job. Mm-hmm. Very much ask your players, what do they see? What do they find? What's here? And the roles are just, for those who don't know, it's a 2d12 system. Mm-hmm. And you designate one as your hope dice and one as your fear dice. And when you roll, whichever has the highest value on it, that means you rolled with hope or you rolled with fear. So that creates kind of four possible outcomes, right? Succeed with hope, succeed with fear, fail with hope, and fail with fear. Mm-hmm. So that already just gives us a variety of different scenarios and outcomes right from the get-go, mm-hmm. Which is totally so much more narrative and so much more flexible, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really liked that. I like the 2d12 system. The GM still rolls a d20, so the mm-hmm. big dice don't get left out entirely. Yes, they don't get grumpy in the dice bag. But yeah. I liked that. I thought that yeah. was cool, and I thought that kind of a lot of nuance was cool for the way I like to tell stories.
Yeah, it was interesting because it felt like we were handing control back and forth, I guess, of the, control is not the right word, but it felt a little bit more, yeah, more collaborative in that it was okay, so I rolled with, fear or hope, there's a narrative aspect to that too, but then also mechanical aspect, especially in combat, right? So we had sort of one big combat session at the end where we kept on rolling with fear, and the way that it works in Daggerheart is that there's no real initiative order. It's if you roll with fear, the GM gets to kind of take a turn, you kind of go back and forth like that. So I think for you it was probably more interesting because we kept on failing in that, we kept on rolling with fear, and then you get to do something like that.
The dice were in my favor for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that for you as a player, not having an initiative order? Did that feel empowering? I think that was the idea, right? Is that a lack of initiative was supposed to empower just folks being like, this is what needs to happen right now, and like being able to do that. Is that how it felt?
Yeah, I think that worked well. Although, I mean, I've played, and I'll say that the table that we were playing at was, you know, they're kind of bought into the, bought into it. I mean, I think like everybody at the table has run games before, before too, right? So there is that element of like, well, we sort of know how this is supposed to work. And like, so I've played a handful of games where there's sort of no real initiative before. I think if I was coming straight from and only from D&D, I think that would have been bewildering. And like, well, but then how do we decide who goes first? It's like, well, you decide based on like sort of what's the coolest, you know, first, first thing to do. Yeah. So, I mean, I liked that, quite a bit. I would say, I mean, I think it did lead to a couple times where we sort of at the table were like, hey, like who hasn't gone yet? Like, you know, we're quite sure. You know, and then one of our other players had a lot of like sort of reaction abilities to what was happening. So like they did a lot of stuff every turn, but then, you know, we'd realize like, oh, like you actually haven't taken your turn. So I mean, like it was interesting. I'd be really curious how it starts to work if you like once you get into higher levels and stuff, right? Like
definitely.
So for like we did up to level 2. I think that's where we kind of stopped.
Yeah, we got one advancement.
Yeah, one advancement, which was fun, right? Like, you know, it's fun to kind of start to see how, you know, how those characters and stuff can evolve. But yeah, just like, I think once you get farther into it and like everybody has like 1,000 things they can do, I wonder how that falls down or works better.
Yeah, I think from my side, it felt, I knew it was supposed to feel empowering, right? And the first couple minutes of the combat, I was like, this is great. I've got such an experienced table. Folks know how to do this. But then, like you said, like the conversation started happening of like, oh, has this person been able to go? Have you had an actual turn or are you just reacting? So I think for me, it kind of shifted and began to feel a bit like a responsibility something else to manage. Whereas when you have an initiative order, you don't have to worry about it. You just know that in time you're going to get there and it'll be your turn. There's a lot of waiting. There's like a trade-off to that, of course, right? It's sitting there for everyone else's turn. So this creates definitely a more like active listening situation. But I don't know. I was like, oh, I did not expect to feel like I had to manage this. Again, even though this wasn't like a player capacity thing at all.
No, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Like you remove that, but then you still, I don't know, you still sort of need taking turns.
Yeah,
like,
I want everyone to have fun.
Yeah. Like, I would never play this with, like, kids, right? Like, that's Like, whereas you can, because you need some of those, I don't know, social guardrails, some etiquette and stuff, right? If you have someone who's going to be a dominant personality, they could just be like, well, I'm going to take a turn, and I'm going to take another turn, and, like,
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, like, in the book, does it give any suggestions for, like, hey, you know, there's no initiative, but, like, everybody sort of should take a turn before you roll around to the next round, or...
It's very much rule of cool. Like, hey, it emphasizes inclusion. It emphasizes like, you know, calling on quieter players, making sure they've had the opportunity. But those are really like, so much of this book is framed as like advice, like good GM advice, is kind of how I read it.
Yeah.
And it is all good and helpful, but the structure doesn't provide it. Like I feel like this is not an intro RPG. Like, I feel like you need to have a decent amount of RP chops, a decent amount of like initiative in your own like character, like, oh, my character would want this or do this. Which was a little surprising to me, I guess, just based on like the way it was marketed and like all of the supporting. Well, one of the things I really liked about it is all of the supporting educational materials they published with the book.
Yeah.
I'm a tech writer, so I love documentation. I love it when it's there. And so they had fantastic, they had video online, they had video tutorials, they have printouts that you can hold next to your character sheet to talk you through like what each line on the character sheet means and what it does. I think that's fantastic. I love that. But it feels a little anachronistic with like the reality of playing this game, which is that it's not really an intro game. So it seems like the folks who are going to be playing this, maybe, I mean, it's great. I enjoyed it. I liked it, but it was like, oh, this is presented like an intro RPG and I'm not totally certain it feels like it after playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Like on the player side of it, right? So the cool, like, I mean, one of the cool things about it is you kind of get these cards that represent your abilities and your backgrounds and stuff like that. But I mean, even at, you know, level 2, you know, advanced, like, right, we had, I mean, I had like 5 cards out there, yeah, and I had like 2 pages of a character sheet that was kind of flipping back and forth, and like a handful of other rules and stuff. And like, that's like, I don't know, that's just sort of the waters I swim in. So I'm like, it's not a big deal to me. But I, again, like trying to hand that to someone who's never played before, mm-hmm, it'd be like, that's a lot. Like, I mean, mm-hmm, you know, say what you want about D&D, but the character sheet is pretty like, it's dense with information, but it's also just one sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. When absolutely, it gets down to it. But yeah, so it's, yeah, I don't think it's a starter RPG. I'd be curious to see if it could work that way. But I also think like the path that someone's going to take to get to Daggerheart as their first role-playing game, like I think is going to go through, oh, I heard about this from Critical Role.
Exactly.
Like, right. Like, yeah, I don't think you're going to wander into Vault of Midnight in Ann Arbor and they're going to be like, oh, this is the one you should.
True.
This is the one you should get.
But I could see folks who've been watching Critical Role for a while and haven't played, you know, who've enjoyed it as media and then being like, oh, cool, a new RPG. So I wonder if there might be folks who find it that way as their first RPG. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't know. It's curious. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the hope and fear mechanic. So this is something that like I think I like, but I also think I don't like
I feel the same.
Yeah, it's like it's a really neat idea, and I think it might start to fall down a little bit the more you get into the game, because like if you want something to succeed, you don't really have a mechanism. Like, you don't have, like, a great mechanism for, like, okay, like, I want to roll this. Like, I want to see if I can do this thing. But I also don't want the big consequence of, like, if I fail, then, mm-hmm, right? Like, then the GM's getting, you know, getting their fear, right? So you got, like, those, are they fear tokens?
Yeah.
That you could spend to do stuff. You know, I think for the most part, like, that's fine. Again, like, the GM's not out to, like, total party kill you. But maybe. yeah, but, like, so it did make it feel a little bit like, is this sort of worth rolling for, like, because there isn't really a great state of like, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good point. I didn't think about it that way, because
you
guys also, you get players receive hope when they roll with hope, but those are more, they don't empower or they don't allow you get your action whether you have hope or not. Sometimes you can do extra things, or you can add like a feature or an experience. Mm-hmm. Right, is my understanding, but you still had your basic actions available to you with or without hope.
Yeah.
Whereas as a GM, I had to have fear in order to move or to do something. So it was a little bit more of a an active, more of an active resource a bit.
That's interesting. Yeah. So you would have, so we would roll, you get some fear tokens. And then if you really wanted to do anything kind of more than just sort of narrate what's happening, you had to like, you had to be, I don't know, like almost goad us into rolling so you could get some fear tokens. Yeah.
And I mean, the book, I don't know that the book intends, the rules intend it that way. Like they're pretty clear, like, hey, you're the storyteller. Like, these are ways to, you know, you don't have to wait for a player failure to move the story forward. You know, the book is written not to do that, but it does feel like that's how the mechanic kind of ends up functioning, or at least it did at our table.
I mean, I almost wonder if like, if you had players and GMs who weren't used to other systems, if they would just sort of elide a lot of that and just be like, oh, well, I'm just going to do this. Right. Like, but I mean, when you have so many like systems brained people playing a game together, it's like, of course they're going to be like, I mean, there was more than once where like the table stopped and 2 people got out their books to look up a rule. Mm-hmm. When everybody was sort of like, it doesn't matter. Right.
Right.
But, like, but we're also like, but we really want to know.
And we're playing it for the first time. Like, you know, we're trying to experience it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I didn't think about how the hope could like end up kind of like making you, you know, putting a cost to these actions. That's so maybe considering like a modification where only like succeeding with hope or failing with fear. Only the two more extreme outcomes, yield a token, and the 2 more middling ones don't, maybe.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, or even just having a, I don't know. I guess, like, if there isn't going to be, and now we're getting into more, like, a philosophical thing. It's like, if there isn't going to be a downside to failing on whatever the thing is, then it probably isn't worth a roll. Right?
Also true.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, if there's no consequence, don't roll for it. Right?
Yeah, there's no consequence, don't roll for it. Yeah, but it's also like, I don't know. I think there's something to that. Like, I want to try this thing, right? But I also want to like not just leave it up to like, oh, you just do it. Like, I want to try this thing, but not have a big potential downside.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I'll say too, like as a GM, it was, I like the, like I kind of said earlier, like the variety of paths that come from those four possible mm-hmm. outcomes, I guess five, if you consider critting. Mm-hmm. But it was a little hard to adjudicate in the moment, like the difference between a yes and or a yes, but, or a no and.
Mm-hmm.
It felt, I don't know that I always did a great job of kind of like nailing the tone of like what failing with fear or like what, you know, succeeding. It was hard to parse in the very moment, right? When you're reacting so fast to everything.
Yeah. Happening. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, have you, yeah, because you almost had to have, you'd have to have like four responses, right?
And I didn't. I certainly did not all the time have four, right? Yeah. So it was kind of just like, well, this feels aligned, but that's mm-hmm. kind of what I do already as a GM, right? So that structure didn't feel like it supported it. It kind of felt like I had to use my, again, kind of use my GM skills to fit into the structure mm-hmm. as provided, kind of versus the other way around.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of like playing or running Blades in the Dark, for example, right? It's a similar problem of like, I don't know. It's, you don't get off the hook easy as a GM in these sorts of games where you can just be like, oh, well, you miss, right? Like, it's like, oh, well, you miss, but then this other thing happens, or, you know, you succeed and this other thing happens, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, so it can be a little bit more taxing, I think, to run as a game when you can't just keep falling back to like, oh, well, the book tells me like, okay, you failed, you missed, let's go to the next person.
Yeah.
One other thing on combat, and then I want to talk about some other stuff, but like the other thing about that was interesting about combat is like, when you roll to hit, right? So there's still kind of the roll to hit thing, and then you roll damage. When you roll damage, you really can only kind of do like either what is like one, two, or three damage to someone. So the bigger the number gets, like you're kind of falling into ranges. And then if you get like a really big number, you kind of just go over the range and it just kind of gets like collapsed down to, you know, one, two, or three hit points. What was that like on the GM side? I mean, it felt a little mathy.
Yeah, I felt like it was very clunky. Yeah, because similar to your character sheets, all the monsters I was running had a similar range of, you know, less than seven, you know, 7 points is minor damage, between seven and 14 is major, and then over 14 is severe, right?
Yeah.
And I think I like the idea of using armor slots. So I think that was one thing this did well, is you could trade using a slot on your armor, taking damage to your armor to offset taking a hit point, one of those one, two, or three hit points. So I like that, right? That kind of like more active armor mechanic. But man, there's a lot of numbers, and several times I was like, wait, did you roll that to hit? Was that your hit points, or is that how many HP? Like, which number are we talking about? I don't know. I felt like we could have just dealt with a pool of hit points and it would have maybe been functionally the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like, you ended up having to, I don't know, like you're rolling your damage and then consulting a table to figure out how much your damage did. It's like, well, is there a way to just kind of collapse that or just have it in the two hit roll, right? Like, I'm just like, okay, you know, if you're below this number, it's, you know, nothing. Yeah. And then if, there's some sort of range above that too. Right. Again, I'm not a math person. Like, I couldn't figure that out, you know, but like,
Nor am I.
I'm positive that someone could, but yeah, it did feel like it felt like in an effort to make it simple, it still ended up being the same number of rolls and same number of math, like, you know, math equations that you'd have to do for, you know, any other sort of, system.
Yeah. And abstracted, right? Because you're like, ooh, I rolled 14 damage. Like, that's really cool. And then you're like, oh, that's actually just two hit points. Like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know. It kind of took some of the splash out of it too, I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like on the player end, like, you know, not having access to the enemy kind of character sheets and stuff, like it just, like, we didn't really have a sense of like, oh, like how, I don't know, like, what do I need to get to like really like do this? And I think I even at one point, you know, I asked pretty directly, like, what number am I trying to get to? You know, like that doesn't feel good. Like when you're getting down to like, cause you're trying to have this really like swingy, fun sort of like, you know, battle and stuff. And then you're just like, okay, but do I need to get a 14 or a 15?
Like,
you
know, like I hit, but like, it still doesn't feel like the hit is being rewarded totally. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So like I landed it, but like, I still need to, like, there's still some uncertainty about the outcome of that damage. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then too, even if you that. Like, if you got such like a big number too, it's like that also felt almost deflating. Cause it's mm-hmm. like, well, I mean, after a certain number, it sort of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and like, right. There was a homebrew rule that we looked up. Like you could add like whatever mega damage or whatever, I forget what mm-hmm. called it, but you know, like severe, yeah, super severe. Like, and it just, like that would have been like nice, but it just also like, I don't know. It kind of felt a little, I don't know, a little like not quite right. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have felt more galling sort of as the game went on. It's like,
yeah,
like,
I just did 68 points of damage and you're marking 3 HP. I'm yes. like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk about the adventure you ran. So this was in the book. It was sort of like a written adventure that was just in the starter
book. It's available on the website. Yep. So it is a official published, Daggerheart branded, and they provided pregens. We, our table mm-hmm. opted to explore the really cool races and classes that Daggerheart brings. Those were so fun. And probably one of my favorite parts was like the really, really different kinds of characters folks could build. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what do we have? You were a, mycelial person.
Yeah. Giant mushroom person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had a spooky tortoise.
Uh huh.
We had a giantess. Mm-hmm. We had a grumpy old wizard, mm-hmm. elf wizard, and we had a fawn, kind of trickster fawn also. Yeah. So we had a really cool cast of characters.
It was, super fun. Yeah.
What'd you think of the character making process? How was that?
I'm such like a theme nerd. Like, I mean, I just like, as soon as I saw that, like, oh, I could be a mushroom person, like, that was it. And then it's like, I kind of didn't care too much after that. It was like, it's like, okay, cool. I'm a mushroom person. I guess I'm a, you know, I picked like the cleric class. I don't remember what it was called, in the system. Yeah. And like, so that was really fun. But I mean, like, yeah, like at the table, it was really fun doing the character creation because it was like so many unique ideas were coming out of it. And I don't think like people were like stretching to be like, oh, I really want to do this, like, really wild thing I've been thinking about for a long time. It just sort of emerged from, oh, these are my options in front of me. Like this, mm-hmm. this is kind of cool how it all puts pieces together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, their
art was great and very evocative and like, very much led to like, oh, I could do this or this or this. Mm-hmm. Art was gorgeous. Yeah. Loved it.
Yeah. And then even the NPCs, I mean, like, I don't know what it was like on your end, but I mean, all the NPCs that you ran and that just like had such like a vibrancy to them too.
Only one was pre-written, so only the Whitefire Arcanist was provided. But they gave good not just like stats, right, but they were like, oh, her affect is this, her wings do this, her, you know, her antenna do this. So a little bit of a way to kind of embody or like express that like physicality, which I thought was really neat and helpful. Kind of makes it more memorable, right? When you're like, oh yeah, this is the character who looks like this or acts like this.
Yeah, I think, I guess, like, yeah, mild spoilers for this adventure, so skip ahead 10 seconds. But I mean, like, she's, you know, the Whitefire Arcanist is a, like, what, 7 foot tall lightning bug.
Wizard. Huge lightning bug lady.
Yeah, it's like super cool, right? It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's so evocative. Yeah, I mean, it's like, how would you describe the setting?
I really liked the setting. So the quick start adventure we ran took place in the Sablewood, which is this mythic older than the world forest that's dark and has all of these animals that are kind of like spliced together. So you've got like fox squirrels and you've got, you know, turtles with wings and you've got just all sorts of, it probably could turn kind of like grotesque, but it wasn't presented. You could make it grotesque, but it wasn't presented that way. Just like, like whimsy turned up to 11. But also in kind of like a dark, secretive, you know, dangerous place. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the setting. I thought it was a ton of fun. I thought it had like a really cool mood to it. And some of the pre-gens, they gave you all sorts of locations in the Sablewood. So if we had continued our adventure, they were like, hey, interesting stuff happens over here. Or, hey, there's a settlement over in this place who specializes in this. So they really provided you, even within this like intro world, with a lot of places that you could like take your adventure, which I liked.
Oh, That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it definitely felt like it's like a whimsical fantasy, but not, I don't know, it's not like, oh, there's a weird pun-filled something happening in the background all the time. It was more just like a, oh, like you could, it felt like if you wanted to pull on any thread in there, that there's like depth to what was happening and like a reason why these things were the way they were.
Yeah.
Which I like a lot, like, right, of just that, like, oh, like, there's all this other stuff happening, and we're not exploring that because we're kind of on this other mission, mission that we're doing, but it would be really fun to figure out, like why does this festival happen every year? Like, why, you know, like, what's going on with it? Like, you know, where are people coming from to, you know, like, come in for the festival? Like, yeah, there's just, like, all these questions, I think, that, like, you could answer really easily, that it would be satisfying to kind of explore as well.
Yeah, setting was so, and again, even just in the, it's very sketched out, the setting, right? Like, there's not tons of detail. They don't give you a bunch of stat blocks or, like, you know, tables to roll on or anything, but they're just very effortlessly. They're like, this is older than the Forgotten Gods. This is ancient. There's a lot going on below the surface. Like, it's, they just very, very easily just kind of handed you that aura of mystery and wonder and, like, very ancient old weirdness, which was pretty charming.
Yeah. If you contrasted that to, like, I don't know, like D&D, like, you know, Forgotten Realms or the Sword Coast or something like that, do you have that same feeling from those settings? Like, or does this feel measurably different?
Pretty rarely. And, you know, it might also be a difference in how I approach, because hello, Kelsifer's checking in.
Hey, Kelsifer. Yeah.
One of the ways I go about running adventures is I usually find, like, a pre-published, pre-designed one, and then I very lovingly break it down to its bones and rebuild it.
Yeah.
And this is quite the opposite, probably because it's newer and there's a lot less material out there. And the way it's structured, they give you the vibes, they give you the bones, and then you build it off of that.
Yeah.
Which maybe more work, or maybe a different kind of, like, work as a GM to figure out, but they just kind of started with the vibes, whereas I feel like many of the D&D adventures start with the details.
Yes.
This person's here, they have this item, you know, you have to roll a 12 to get through the door, and this was completely the opposite, so.
Yeah. That's a really astute point, because every time I've tried to prep something in from a D&D book, it's like I feel like I my brain can't hold on to the details without understanding, like, the overarching story and stuff. So, like, the explanation of, like, the history and the place and stuff is, like, cool, neat.
Yeah.
But, like, I need to know, like, what are we driving at? Like, what's sort of the story driving at? Yeah. Right. So, I mean, to hear that, like, you know, flipping that for Daggerheart, that seems like a really good move.
Yeah. And again, that might be more work, right? Because you, like, the tavern and all of that, like, I'm trying to remember if they gave me any of those NPCs.
Oh,
They might have, but I made a lot of them too, right? Yeah. So it permits and really requires, like, you to bring your own kind of world to it. And that might be lovely. That might be your style. Or if you're a break it down and take parts for scraps thing, it might not be. It might require more work than you're interested in doing. So
yeah,
it could just be a probably a style thing, honestly.
Yeah. Did you explore at all? Like, so I was just looking before we started recording. So Daggerheart has something called frames, which I think are sort of like, So was this adventure presented as, like, a frame?
I think it certainly could be. It's not one of the official, I don't think it's one of the ones in the book.
Okay.
But similar, the frames are very vibe based, right? Like, ooh, fallen empire. These are the themes. These are what's going on. And then they do, you know, several pages of information and people of, people of note. This was a little bit more linear, because it literally gave me five acts. Like, first we do this, then we do this, then we do this. So this one's a lot more linear, because it's a starter adventure than a frame. But I would say, like, the Sablewood source material as a whole could totally fit into that similar category.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I laughed a little bit, because, like, I mean, this adventure even started with sort of a goblin ambush, right?
Yeah, so it's classic. It's classic.
Yeah, it's something we talked about on Roll for Topic a little bit. Like, it'd be sort of fun to run, just to go through and play the goblin ambush in every system, and, like, sort of, you're like, how do you tell what a system can do? Is, like, you run this scenario, right? And, like,
I kind of love that.
Yeah, it's really going to kind of like show you the breadth of what the system can do. Yeah, because I mean, I think even when we did that, I think we tried to talk, you know, to the mm-hmm. you know, to the equivalent creatures, and that, you know, and then we ended up having to fight them, and like, yeah, just like yeah. doing all those sorts of things.
Yeah, you got to like stress test it a little bit, mm-hmm. like what's here, yeah. what can be done, and yeah. It's such a good first encounter, right? Like, oh shoot, I've got a weapon. Like we said at the end, none of us actually had daggers. Everyone had a heart, yes. no one had a dagger. but like, whoa, what's my equipment? What do I do?
Yeah. That's really good. Yeah. Okay. So I guess the question that I think I asked you on Sunday too, but like, are you going to run this again? Like are you happy to have done it? And like, it's you move on to the next game.
I'm happy to have done it. And I don't know. I'm going to reach for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about yeah. you?
I am also happy that I played it. I don't know. I don't think I would necessarily. I think like, there's two, I would want to try all the other ones that we mentioned. Like, I'd want to try Draw Steel mm-hmm. and Tales of the Valiant and then make a kind of decision from there. But I just don't know if I have another three mini campaigns in a fantasy combat system in
yeah.
me.
Yeah, truly.
At this point. Yeah. Truly. I mean, yeah, maybe later. I mean, I think if my kids started getting into more games and stuff, mm-hmm. maybe we'd try it. Yeah, but I mean, it's, I don't dislike it. I would love to see, like, I really do want to watch like a Critical Role or like an actual play that uses the system, because I think there's a lot of depth there in how the characters interact that we didn't quite touch. We tried a little bit, but I mean, you just don't have, you know, time.
Four sessions
Four sessions. And like, that's one thing I did want to mention too about the character creation. There was a very explicit like, hey, you guys got to make certain like some connections between each other, mm-hmm. right? So we had to like figure out a couple of these things together.
Yeah.
Yeah, which again, we didn't really lean on too much, but I think it did help kind of flesh out the world a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think like if you had some of those sort of done with a capable actual play cast, right, I think it could be pretty cool.
I haven't had the chance. I kept meaning to watch one and just never did, but
yeah,
I think it would be really cool to see what other mm-hmm. stuff they bring to it. And like you said, like there's a lot of like shades of gray in this. So yeah, mm-hmm. like what could a crew and a cast, like how could they sink into that in really cool ways?
Yeah, that's okay. And that's sort of my last question. That's a really good segue to my last question that I wanted to ask you. Like, so we tended towards like kind of whimsical adventure. And I think this is like a common thing. And I think that's mostly because like when you get together with your friends, you sort of just want to joke around anyway. Do you think that this system would support like a more serious game at all, or is it really going to just with like kind of the DNA of all the kind of the different kinds of characters and stuff and the art style and whatever, right? Is it really really support more whimsical rather than serious?
What an interesting question. I am going to say that it could support serious because so the text and the rules are so clear that you should as often as you can ask your players, okay, your role failed with fear. What happens, right? Mm-hmm. So you're handing. So I think my fear with like doing a real grimdark would be that the players felt punished or felt unrewarded. But if it's a system like this that is built to be so collaborative and ask them to tell you how do we take the grimdark darker, right? Mm-hmm. I think it could. It wouldn't feel punishing, and it would feel like a really cool and interesting story. So I think it could support that. I think some of the frameworks are a little bit more dark and edgy than this intro adventure. So I think that level of collaboration allows it to potentially go there if the whole table's into it. Right. And, and I think they could steer it that way.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the, not that we have like plot armor or anything, but like it did feel like a little bit like maybe the activation energy to kind of create a new character might make you like give you a little bit of pause to like you know mm-hmm. yeah like do stuff that's too dangerous that might maybe like kill them off or something like that. But I mean also like I think now that we've played a little bit, like I don't think character creation would take like a whole session zero the second time through, right? I don't think it's as simple as I'm sure that maybe there is a generator like a dagger heart
someone
character
will
generator
build one.
I'm sure someone will. Yeah, but I mean you could go through it pretty fast, I think. Yeah, just grab a couple cards, you know, fill out the stats, and you're off to the races. But cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jess. This was a good conversation. Really appreciate you coming on. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything else you want to say?
No, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I was just thinking about it while we were talking. I think you were one of the very first guests on Roll for Topic, like way back when.
So good to be. What an honor, full circle.
I know, yeah. Yeah, and then I think you might have actually introduced us to John Corey. Yeah.
Am I the infection vector?
I think you are. Yeah.
I am proud of that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much. Yeah, this has been Roll for Topic. Really appreciate all you who listen to it. You can always check out Andy Rao and John Corey, who we just mentioned, on Zombie Strains. You can find them at, I think it's at zombiestrainspodcast.com or just Google it. They keep watching really scary movies, so I am very far behind.
So we don't have to.
Yeah. But it's great. I love them. Go check them out. But okay, that does it for us. Remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM. Cool.